Welcome in to episode 371 of the Wrestling Brethren Podcast. Tonight is all about AEW Dynamite and the wrestling news of the last 48 hours. With me tonight are Seth Zillman and Jared Aubrey. Fellas, how the hell are you?
Yeah, it's the reunion of all three of us again after like a whole week. So yeah, good times to be had. A fun episode of Dynamite to talk about, and we got some news as well. So back to normal.
Well, as normal can be when you're busier than a dog with two noses. So interesting to hear what the news is today. I'm going to cold react, so this could be interesting. I promise nothing.
Yes, a trifecta on the cans, finally.
I promise nothing, and I've read nothing.
It's a whole lot of nothing, Josh.
We're going to turn it into something.
Why am I here?
Where do I go?
What is this place?
Okay, so originally not a lot of news, and then within the last hour, as we started to record, news came out of New Japan that kind of was reported, not reported, but rumored, and now is finally official. New Japan released a statement saying Kazuchika Okada will be leaving New Japan Pro Wrestling after the conclusion of his contract on January 31st, 2024. We apologize to fans for the abrupt nature of this announcement, but join them in wishing Okada the very best in his future. As the New Beginning series begins this weekend, Okada will appear on February dates on February 11th in Osaka and February 23rd and 24th in Sapporo. Changes will be made to forthcoming cards with an announcement to follow. We appreciate your understanding and continued support. And then Okada released a statement as well. I have nothing but gratitude for having been a part of New Japan Pro Wrestling since 2007 and for New Japan bringing me from a 19-year-old kid off the plane in Mexico to the rainmaker I am today. Thank you to the best of companies in New Japan, to the best of opponents that I've been able to face here, and to the best of fans that have cheered and booed me over the years. I promise to make it rain in every match that I have left, so keep watching. Thoughts on Okada leaving New Japan?
Well, that is pretty big news. I mean, in my opinion, he's the biggest star they have, at least as far as their own talent. I mean, obviously they have some big international stars, but it is a little surprising to me. I mean, I do think he'd see a measure of success in the States if that is indeed where he's going. With Vince now out of power in WWE, that does leave the question mark of could this be a WWE move and how well would he be treated? They've done pretty well with Nakamura so far. I say so far, it's been, what, 6 years now? His English is not as good as Nakamura, but I mean, you can understand what he says. Me personally, I think it's more than just bias. I mean, though I admit I am probably biased in this opinion, I think AEW would be a better fit for him because they do kind of have that international feel, I think. And as we'll probably talk about with Dynamite, there's been some tweaks, at least that I've noticed as far as how the show is presented. But some of our listeners may remember when we do our annual draft show and we do our fantasy booking based on that. I think one of the years, if not multiple years, I had the idea of Okada with Paul Heyman as his mouthpiece. And if there's going to be the shift of Roman Reigns to a full-blown babyface, I'm not saying that's going to happen. I'm just saying what if. Then you'd have to have Okada. You'd have to have Heyman move on to somebody else. And I personally think Okada would be a good fit for that, but that's just me. But huge news as far as New Japan. It'll be interesting to see if he is going to WWE, how well he'd be received, though.
This sounds to me like TK has opened up the purse strings. I don't know if, you know, who's really in the running, but he certainly has the funds to make it happen. That's my immediate reaction is like, oh, TK is going to pay him. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, and why?
Yeah, and it kind of goes without saying, if he does go to AEW, there's still the door open for him to do New Japan dates because they definitely have that working relationship.
Yep.
In regards to other promotions, He cannot appear in the Royal Rumble unless he's given explicit permission from New Japan, because there's 4 days difference between the Rumble and the end of his contract. He did, over the weekend, make amends with TNA on how they poorly treated him the first go around. Mm-hmm. So technically, all three are open, and you know, are open possibilities. Now, Seth, weren't Okada and Nakamura Chaos, or part of Chaos? Yes.
Yeah, Nakamura was the original leader of Chaos, and Okada took over when Nakamura went to WWE.
Okay.
So if he does go to WWE, there's a definite history there. Whether that will be explored, I don't know.
Well, you know, much of the running up to Punk coming back was all the Best in the World references. And in Nakamura's promos against Cody, he kept saying, I'm going to bring chaos to you. So
yeah,
people are already reading the tea leaves. So it would be interesting. All I can say is Triple H knows wrestling. Triple H knows the history of wrestling. And I'm sure he knows exactly who Okada is.
He is a student of the game, pun intended.
Okay, next news item, and tied into this news item, I would like to issue an apology to Limitless Keith Lee, because I made fun of the fact leading into World's End, I had did that whole bit with his theme song saying that he couldn't get on TV. Well, courtesy of House of Wrestling sharing this info, Keith Lee is set to undergo double surgery. Nothing disclosed on what is getting fixed, but Keith shared that it's been a problem since September of 2022, and he's been battling through it, and now he's just determined it's time to get fixed. So he's not having one surgery, he's having two surgeries. So again, my apologies to the Limitless One.
Well, I hope that's not as serious as that initial thought makes you think, because it's like not one, but two. I don't know if it's an injury or what, but yeah, all the best to him and wish him a speedy recovery.
To me, it would just seem like left and right of something. Mm-hmm. That's how I took it.
Knees?
Yeah, maybe knees, shoulders, who knows. But when I hear double or two, my first go-to is left and right.
Yeah. Yeah, well, absolutely. You know, if he's going to get done under the knife here and doubly so, you know, absolutely all the best for him. I would love to see him back and used properly. Yeah, so if he's healthy and he can go, it's like, let's do it.
Yeah, that is the key. Okay, and lastly, there's been no public update on Seth Rollins from his injury suffered at Monday Night Raw. However, he has been pulled from this weekend's live events so that he may rest up. So we'll have to pay close attention to Monday Night Raw if nothing is released between now and then. If it's something minor, he's got plenty of time to rest up between now and Mania. We just got to cross our fingers that it's nothing major.
Yeah, I would like to think that since there's no major update, that would be a good sign. Because I would think if there was something broken or ripped or torn or whatever, I know they said he was going to undergo an evaluation. So hopefully no news is good news.
That's what I was thinking too. If he's gone and seen medical and had all the checks and tests and all that stuff, and if something was egregiously wrong, that we would have heard by now. So I think the fact that, you know, there is nothing is a good thing, but you never know. They might let it linger for a bit and it's like, well, actually he can't. And then actually tell us. That's happened before too. So, but I like the way it's going so far.
Yes, there is precedent on both sides. And the saying goes, in wrestling anyway, what you think is the truth may actually be a lie, and what you think is a lie may actually be the truth. Okay, moving on to AEW Dynamite from January 17th. The show kicked off with a TNT title match as Christian Cage defeated Dustin Rhodes. Now, let me throw in this additional tidbit of information. 50-year-old Christian Cage defeated 54-year-old Dustin Rhodes. And these two go in the ring, showing that age is nothing but a number.
Yeah, and I heard that match, or actually saw the challenge from last week when I saw they're going to do Christian versus Dustin. I'm like, this is probably going to be the best match in the show. And I think it could be argued that it was. And other than the Canadian Destroyer on the floor, there really wasn't anything high risk on that. I should say, if I understand it right, the Canadian Destroyer is actually a pretty safe move when you're doing it correctly. But we've seen so many Canadian Destroyers, it's going to become the next hardest part of the ring type thing, where it's just going to be done for the cheap pop at the beginning of the match. And here it was, the first match on a regular show, and they do it a Canadian Destroyer on the floor. So that was my only complaint about the match. But other than that, everything was really good.
At least it was a title match.
Right.
Oh, Seth is going to get me on a rant. Not going to do it. Not going to do it. In the interest of time, I'm not going to do it, but please don't do that to Canadian Destroyer.
Oh, the timer's got 8 minutes left, and I've got more than 8 minutes worth of thoughts. So sorry, we're going over.
All right. Oh, but you said, Christian Cage versus, Dustin Rhodes. My first reaction was, so Dustin Rhodes is getting TV time these days and all these people aren't. And then I heard 50 years old and 54 years old. I'm like, oh no. And then I heard match of the night. And I'm like, oh, good thing I have this thing on DVR. Some of these folks are defying age. Like I completely forgot that Christian Cage was 50 years old.
No, well, he hasn't aged since like 2005.
Right. He's like Tom Cruise. He's just doesn't show anything. Edge is up there, and then Sting is like jumping off of balconies and stuff, right? So what's the number?
Yeah, Sting has zero fucks left to give. There was a tag match involving Orange Cassidy. The match was not important. The important part was post-match. The Best Friends were interrupted by three members of the Undisputed Kingdom. It was Roderick Strong coming down with the Kingdom themselves, Matt Taven, Mike Bennett. And he pretty much issued a challenge to Cassidy for his international title. However, he used the setup that was used most recently by Xia Li on Monday Night Raw when she was challenging Becky Lynch. And Roderick's basically making fun of Orange, is like, oh, you're defending the championship a lot, but you're not defending against me. Are you scared? Are you not able to defend the title as much? Is the pressure getting to you? And Orange is like, all right, well, I'll defend it right now. Let's go. And Roderick's like, no. We're going to do it at the March pay-per-view. You got 8 weeks, pal. We're doing it on my time. I'm like, what? You just complained about him not defending the title. He's like, all right, I'll just face you. You could have probably beat him and won the title. No, we're going to do it in 8 weeks at the pay-per-view, pal.
He's a heel.
Yeah, I know, but still, it makes zero sense. You want the title. You could have had the title. What the hell?
Yeah. I mean, a couple years back when Hangman was champion and was doing the feud with Bryan Danielson, there was a similar thing. Danielson was coming out and talking tough about wanting the match, and Hangman would lay down the title and say, hey, let's do it right now. And then Danielson would find some excuse to not do it. Like he wasn't in his gear, or wow, I just had a match. And, to me, it's heel 101 work. So that's just how I took it.
Sorry, Josh, you said Orange Cassidy and I stopped giving a fuck.
I figured as much. There was an emotional segment next. This was the 1 year anniversary of the death of Jay Briscoe when he was lost in that car accident in 2023, January 17th. Mark Briscoe came out, said as much, thanked the fans for their support. He said that his two nieces, Jay's daughters, were also in the same truck, and the doctors told his oldest niece that she would never walk again. And he said, however, and then his two daughters, and I'm assuming his son, walked out on stage with Mark, and she did not have any crutches, any walkers, nothing. She was walking on her own. So that was powerful, got me. And they played the same video package that they played a year ago when he passed, and also at the tribute show too, the same video package. So I thought that was very well done. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There was a backstage segment with the Young Bucks being interviewed by Renee, and they interrupted her and said, "Please show us the respect we deserve and address us by our God-given names of Matthew and Nicholas." So they're going the full name heel route. The talking point from this segment was they were asked what has changed in AEW since they first became EVPs. And I think it was Nicholas that said, "We started to lean on yesterday's self-serving, superficial, cancerous superstars." And I was like, "Oh, shots fired.
Snap."
They also mentioned that Sting is not those things, and Sting is a model employee. They just don't like what Sting stands for and represents. He represents the old, aging superstars. And so basically they confirmed that we're going to get this match at Revolution, the Young Bucks taking on Sting and Darby Allin.
I'm not sure why the Young Bucks are going to be the final opponents, but well, I'm sure the match will be good, but I always thought Darby was going to be the final opponent, but that's just me.
Yeah, well, the people to pick his final match, you could have anybody. And yeah, I'm not quite sure I get that one. I think our friends at What Culture had done a video about the reason why, but I never got around to watching it. Not sure if either of you did.
I did not.
Okay.
I think I heard something of when they worked against the Bucks at All In, was it? In Wembley? That's where the idea first, the seeds were planted for that. And then Sting was on board. And then he asked the Bucks if they would do it. I think that's the reasoning. In terms of why it's the Bucks, in terms of why it's not Darby or not a singles match, I don't know. But hey, at least it's not Baron Corbin at WrestleMania.
You had to utter that name.
Okay, we had a Ring of Honor World 6-man tag team title match where Bullet Club Gold defeated the Mogul Embassy and New. So the reason for this, if you're following the story, is that Bullet Club Gold has Trios titles and the Acclaimed has Trios titles. So if they do this super faction against the United Kingdom or Undisputed Kingdom, sorry, then they all have the gold. Which if they end up merging these two titles and doing away with three belts out of the 14 that they have active, I'd be okay with that.
Yep. Same here.
What is ditto in three? Trito, trio, trio.
Ditto plus one.
There you go.
Or times three. I don't know. Next, we had a segment or a match with a segment that Jared will probably pull up on the DVR at some point as Deonna Purrazzo defeated Anna Jay with Toni Storm on commentary. The best part of this match was Toni Storm on commentary. The commentary team was Taz, Excalibur, and Ian Riccaboni from Ring of Honor. Tony Schiavone was out ill, but Toni Storm came to the ring and acted like Ian was Tony Schiavone. She was like, "Schiavone, you look great. You've lost weight. You look healthier. Your skin is not pale. What are you doing? You look fabulous." Like, she just kept praising Ian Riccaboni, thinking it was Tony Schiavone. There's a point where she goes, "Tony, I don't know what you're doing with your feet under the desk, but you need to stop it." I love this character so much. She calls Donna Palazzo again. So good. After the match, Deonna wins, and Deonna says, "You know, Tony, you've changed. We used to hang out. We used to be like sisters, and something's changed in you, and you're not the same person as you used to be." Well, I'm not the same person that I used to be. And then Tony gets flustered and she has Luther pick her up on her shoulders and carries her to the back. But the entire time she has a mic and she's trash talking Deanna on Luther's shoulders on the way out from the ringside area. It's fantastic. I highly recommend watching that entire match and listening to the commentary. Gold. Next, we had Private Party defeat Top Flight. And the only thing I had to say about this match when I saw it was coming up on the screen was, please, for the love of God, everybody stay healthy.
Yep.
And then we had the main event. It was the AEW World title match, Samoa Joe taking on Hook. Now, I will give my bullet points, I will give my thoughts, and then I will leave it up to you guys for your thoughts. Now, I enjoyed the build to this match, even though it was only like a week and a half. I enjoyed Hook's promo the day before on social media because it gave the perspective of, you know, Joe's a badass, but, you know, you want to call me a scrawny kid, fine, but why not me? And I have nothing to lose. It was really, he said it much better, but it was basically, I have nothing to lose. Why not me? You know, who am I? Who the fuck am I? Just a little, you know, scrawny little kid. And it was badass. It was 29 seconds basically. And it was badass. And I thought it was great. However, when this match started, for the most part, I would say probably 88.9% of this match, Joe whooped his ass all over and around the ring. And to me, that completely took me out of the Hook character. I think he lost his aura in this match while taking this ass kicking from Joe. He kicked out of Joe's muscle buster at one, which pissed me off. Hook fired up and practically no-sold the entire beating he just took. Joe then decided, in part of his comeback, Hook tried to hook in the red rum. Joe, being the veteran that he is, blocked it with one hand, not letting Hook clasp his hands together, and then reversed it into the coquina. And Hook passed out from the coquina and did not tap. They did the three arms thing like they did, or three arm raises like they did for MJF. And I get that they're trying to make it look like the heart of a lion and build a baby face, but I think this is too much. You made Joe's offense look extremely weak. Hook gets up after being choked out and says to Joe, "Is that all you got?" Joe comes back in the ring, kicks him in the nuts, hits another muscle buster, and Hook is able to stand up again with little help or any problems. At this point, Joe's about to come back in the ring for a second time, but Hangman makes a run in and Joe powders. Hook goes to exit the ring, and in a production snafu, you can hear somebody on the floor say to Hangman, "Stand him up, I'm going to play his music." And I'm like, oh, God. To which Hook gets back in the ring again with very little help or selling, and then walks out of the ring again, holding the FTW title, and walks back up the ramp, only holding the back of his head. I did not care for this presentation at all. I'm all for building somebody, but with the size difference, with the experience difference, it should have just been an ass whooping 1, 2, 3, and that's it. I did not care for how they made Hook look in this. And the key is, as was mentioned on Busted Open Radio, if Hook is not on TV next week, you are going to have people forget about this real quick. And it's going to be a giant waste of time because you didn't follow up on it. And if you have Hook on TV, what's going to be interesting is the reception that he gets did you make a star or did you just not? And now Joe's offense suffers because of it. Because if Hook can kick out at one, and if Hook doesn't tap out to the coquina, then what's going to happen when he faces other guys of higher caliber like Swerve Strickland or Hangman Page or Chris Jericho or anybody of more experience? I did not care for this at all. Your thoughts?
Well, the concern is certainly understandable. They're kicking out at one. They've kind of been doing that a lot lately with some of the big matches. I think it's kind of their version of the Hulk up. So that didn't bother me as much. But the concern of him just kind of shrugging everything off and no selling from there. You're not wrong. You know, I'm not going to argue with anything you said. The key is the follow-up. And one thing AEW definitely deserves some criticism for, or maybe earned criticism, is a better way to put it, is a lot of times they're not really good on the follow-up for certain stories. They seem to try to feature so many people that stories get lost in the mix. So that is my concern as well. How will this be followed up on? There's a lot of other guys on the roster that would probably have been more believable in the role. As far as Hangman, I think it's just to push my assumption anyway, that it's going to be Hangman versus Joe at Revolution, you know, the next pay-per-view. I certainly can't argue against anything you said.
Yep. Based on your description, Josh, it sounds like a pretty valid criticism. My only guess or hunch would be that, you know, they gave Joe all the offense to make him look like a badass champion, but gave Hook the survivability, you know, the kick out and the pass out. They would try and make him look like a bit of a badass, but it sounds like it failed pretty epically. I'm not into the Hook character at all either, so I'm sure I'd probably doubly not like this match. I can perhaps see what they tried to accomplish. Doesn't sound like it worked.
From what I heard on Busted Open when Bully Ray was discussing this, and I was taking my daughter to school this morning, I guess somebody had brought up why Taz kind of laid out on commentary and why he didn't check on his son type of thing. And Bully Ray made a very good point. He said the minute Taz takes any step toward Joe, or goes to Hook but locks eyes with Joe, he immediately becomes about Joe and Taz.
Yep.
And exactly. Taz cannot do any physicality at all, so there would be no comeuppance for Taz, or no end game, no conclusion to that. And you make it all, you know, the fans remember Taz as the world champion in ECW, the badass, the suplex machine. The minute you make this about Joe and Taz, Hook gets completely forgotten. So there was a point on commentary where Taz said, I think Excalibur had said, oh, this must be tough for you to watch as a father. And Taz said, yeah, I'm actually going to take my headphones off and be over here. Like, he took his headphones off and he kind of just leaned up against the ring barrier, the ringside barrier, and he kind of just laid out, which I thought was probably the only, you know, part of the psychology of the match that actually made sense. It's a shame that he can't do anything physically, because Taz managed Joe in TNA for a spell, and a lot of people say that Joe is basically Taz. You know, Taz, I don't want to say Taz clone, but is basically out of the mold of Taz. So
he was the next generation's Taz, you might say.
There you go. So I thought that would be intriguing, but I can see what Bully's saying, that there's no payoff. That's the word I was looking for earlier, payoff. So yeah, it makes sense. It sucks, but it makes sense. So soapbox aside, the episode was kind of 50-50 for me. There was a lot of stuff I fast-forwarded through because there's a lot of characters I just don't have any emotional attachment to. So since we've already gone over and we're only talking about Dynamite tonight, I will ask for final thoughts.
Well, I think I liked the show a lot more than you did, it seems. But I thought it was had a lot of good wrestling. Obviously, like I said, the first match you could argue was the best match in the show, possibly even the best match of the week. Maybe I'm overstating it, but I also may be biased. And they laid a lot of groundwork for the pay-per-view, I think. So I was very happy with it. But again, like I said, I really can't argue against any of the concerns you had for the main event.
Sounds like I have a Tony Storm segment I have to watch.
Yeah, that was gold. Yeah, she's throwing shoes while perched on Luther's shoulders. And
yeah, you're going to have to let me know your thoughts on that because that was priceless.
Alrighty.
And timeless, I guess. Ha! So the thing as Rumble is next week, we're going to have a little change in the schedule next week. This is what we will do when predictions come around, especially for WWE when their shows are now on Saturdays, and Saturdays are normally our SmackDown shows. So probably on our Monday show, or I'm sorry, Tuesday show next week, when we talk about Raw and NXT, we'll get you up to speed on how the rest of the week will play out. Our next episode will be our SmackDown, Rampage, and Collision review, along with news of the last 48 hours. So until then, once again, thank you for listening, downloading, and subscribing, and we will talk to you next time. Thank you for listening to this episode. You can subscribe to the Wrestling Brethren podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast fix to hear the latest discussion from the Wrestling Brethren. Visit the mothership, if you will, at twbpodcast.com, the online home of the Wrestling Brethren podcast. Let us know your thoughts, questions, and comments on Twitter/X at twbpshow, on Facebook at facebook.com/behindthesquaredcircle, and on Instagram at the Wrestling Brethren. You can follow Jarrett on Twitter/X at thebaconrev. You can follow Seth at Lord Xandrax, and you can follow Josh at Southpaw Josh. Thank you again for listening, and we will talk to you soon with more from the Wrestling Brethren.